from the official home of the Vancouver Canucks.
Hughes gets it free, plays it off the boards to center. Here's Horvat with a partial break down the left wing. Bo Horvat, 18, he scores! The captain does it again! Now here's Edler with a nice pass in front. Pettersson deeks, and he scores! What a goal by Elias Pettersson!
This is the program on Sportsnet 650.
Horvat one-on-one to the Blues line. A beautiful toe drag around. Schwartz goes to the goal. He scores! Unbelievable goal for the captain, Bo Horvat!
Oh my God, who is this guy? Who put the cape on Bo Horvat's back?
Pettersson has a give and go with Hughes, then goes back to him, top of the point, again to Pettersson. Oh, what timer! He scores!
Here's Andrew Walker and Satyar Shah.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Happy Thursday, Vancouver. It's another Vancouver Canucks game day. Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers in town tonight for the second straight night after that, or second straight game, I should say, after Canucks gassed a 3-0 lead a couple nights ago. They'll look to get a little revenge tonight. The official Land Rover pregame show gets going at 5. For now, it's myself, Andrew Walker, Satyar Shah. Bick Nizar is, we're told, en route to join the show. He's headed to the rink tonight, but he's not quite there. So it's Walker, it's Sat, as we get you set, an hour of us. Adnan Virk is going to join us, and we'll check in on the Russell Wilson trade rumors. Ooh. With Michael Sean Dugger down in Seattle. Started to take a life of its own this morning and this afternoon. What's going on? How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I'm excited for this Russell Wilson discussion with Michael Sean Dugar. Great article on The Athletic by him, Jason Jenks, and Mike Sandel. We'll get into all that. And, of course, Canucks, Edmonton Oilers tonight. You know, it's you know what it is? We've had the playoff combo so much, right? At this point, the things I find fascinating is how they're going to bounce back tonight from an effort standpoint. It was such a gut punch the last game. So I'm fascinated to see what they look like tonight and who they're playing for tonight. Because moments like this, when the playoffs look like a distant goal and all you're trying to do is get your bearings, I'm really curious to see what type of effort they play with tonight.
Playoffs?
Yeah, I you know what? I'm relieved, actually. Like, I'm relieved that we can kind of put the playoff discussion officially to bed. Like, it's not like, well, they need to win so many in a row. No. Listen, this is a lost season standings-wise for this club. And that game the other night just illustrated it. But in terms of how they come out tonight, this is kind of the, how do I frame it? It's kind of the nice thing about underachieving as opposed to just not having the talent or ability to win games. Is I expect the Canucks to be fine tonight. I expect them to come out and compete. Doesn't mean they're going to win. They've competed in pretty much every game, and every game's been a pretty much a one-goal game for the last 3 weeks. So I do expect another good game tonight, Sat. You know, it's not fun when you blow a 3-goal lead, but you got to do something right to get out to a 3-0 lead. Mm. It's just the at this point, to me, the wins and losses are a little irrelevant. So I don't know. Is it too pie in the sky to say, hey, just enjoy it. Just enjoy Canucks hockey while we have it for 30 games.
Yeah, you know what? Life in the pandemic, considering what's happening right now, hey, any hockey is better than no hockey. Any Canucks hockey is better than no Canucks hockey. So, yes, I'm there with you on it. But I still think it's one of those things that there are lessons to be learned here, and there is information to be gained here from the Canucks. And as far as coaching goes, you know, we talk so much about, okay, what's going to happen long term? Travis does not have a contract beyond this season. What he gets out of this team and how they play will tell us a lot about Travis Green's abilities as a head coach. And even if it's not going to be extended here in Vancouver and he doesn't get an extension beyond this season, I think we'll learn a lot about what type of head coach he's going to be. Because outside of the first bit of the season, which was an absolute disaster, did not look good on anybody, from an effort standpoint and from a being ready to play standpoint, Travis has done a good job with these guys. But here's the thing. Moments like this, when you feel like the season is slipping away, when you feel like nothing is going your way, it's really easy to kind of just pack it in and be like, who cares? I don't care. Like, we're going to lose anyways. And you don't have that energy. You don't have that drive. Who you play for from this point on, I think, is very important.
Well, you know, the season's almost, it feels like it's almost over. It's pretty much halfway over at this point. It won't be long, but there's still a lot of runway if we're mm-hmm. talking about guys giving up. So yes. I really hope that doesn't happen. You know the gif of from The Office on when they're doing the fire drill and Steve Carell is saying, "Oh my God, everyone, it's happening, it's happening." The Buffalo Sabres.
Yes.
Just listed Jack Eichel as a late scratch for their game starting momentarily.
Oh, so exciting.
I don't know I don't know if it's a healthy scratch or if something's hurt. I don't know. But it bears monitoring. If he's a healthy scratch, it's over.
Right.
If he's a healthy scratch, he's getting traded.
Well, there are three. It's either, you know, it's one of three different things, right? It's either he's getting healthy scratch to send a message, he's getting healthy scratch because he might get traded, or he's injured. And right now, we don't quite know. The one thing I will say, because usually situations like this happen, and we're like, oh my goodness, maybe something's about to happen. Something is afoot. And then it turns out it's something innocuous. One of the conversations around Jack Eichel has been, is he fully healthy? He's getting knocked off pucks easily. He doesn't look quite the same. Not skating as fast. Hey, is that confidence? Is that a lack of belief in the organization and what they're doing and how the season has gone and him wanting out of Buffalo? Or is he actually dealing with something? The team has not come out and admitted that he's dealing with anything. So I do think, as much as, you know, let's keep our ears on this and let's see what happens, and hopefully it is something, you know, interesting and perhaps trade-related, there's a decent enough chance that it could be, you know, injury-related as well.
Yeah, judging by the lateness of it and the tweets, I think people are maybe putting two and two together a little much. But, hey, it would be exciting, right? It'd be exciting. We know that. And I'm sure there's a few Sabres fans that are freaking out right now.
Here we go. The Sabres have tweeted out, injury update, Jake Eichel will not play tonight due to a lower body injury.
Okay. All right. So everyone stand down. Everyone stand down. It's not happening. It's not happening. But he is not playing for the Buffalo Sabres tonight. 650-650, by the way, is the Dunbar Lumber text line if you want to weigh in. Also tonight, you got the Oilers and the Vancouver Canucks. You also have the Calgary Flames and the Ottawa Senators. Sorry, my mic keeps kind of cutting out here. The Ottawa Senators and the Calgary Flames. It is the Battle of the Tkachuk Brothers, and some people have this idea that they're going to scrap tonight. Although Matthew Tkachuk today said anyone that thinks that is an idiot.
Yeah, I get it, right? And like, what do you expect though? Like, do you really expect them to get after it?
Well, I mean, if one of the guys' names was Johnson, I'd say yes, they're the two top agitators in the league. Of course, they'd fight. Right, so I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility because those two guys piss off more guys in the NHL than maybe anybody. It would be a perfect match made in heaven.
But how many times do you see brothers squaring off and fighting in the National Hockey League? The Sutters maybe fought each other at one point. Like maybe that happened
back in the day. I remember.
But they weren't brothers. They weren't all brothers though.
Sure, they were.
Well, they were all and I'm thinking about the kids. Yeah.
The kids aren't brothers. The kids are cousins, but only Brandon's kind of the full time NHL guy there. The Sutters. I remember Keith and Wayne Primo had a really good scrap way back
in
the day.
Okay. Yeah, that's going back a while. You never saw the Lundqvist go after it, for
instance.
No,
you never saw Joel Lundqvist run Henrik, and we never saw the Sedin scrap in practice.
No, didn't see that.
That never happened.
Nope. I mean, Brett Lindros and Eric Lindros, I think once almost got into it this day.
But
didn't Brett Lindros like knock out his brother once or hit him once? I think it was a hit, wasn't it?
Not to poke fun at concussions, but that would have been like the stepbrothers fight where they both knock each other unconscious in 2 seconds.
Oh, so bad.
Speaking of things that probably will not happen, I don't know if it'll happen. What is your percentage of the Seattle Seahawks actually dealing their franchise quarterback, 32-year-old Russell Wilson? Things started to really kind of take shape today. And Michael Sean Dugar is a Seahawks reporter for The Athletic Seattle. He was all over this today. He joins us momentarily on Sportsnet 650 right now. Michael, how are you doing?
I am good. I'm good. How are you guys doing? Anything we need to talk about?
Yeah, where there's smoke, there's fire. Is that your feeling on this Russell Wilson stuff? What was the tipping point that kind of made this, the frenzy that it is today?
I mean, it's been a lot of things, but for me, it was the day of the Super Bowl. I saw Jason Lockenfora's report that teams are calling the Seahawks about Russell Wilson, and in my head, I was like, why would they do that? And I just watched the game like everyone else, and then I saw the picture of Russell sitting next to Goodell, saw AB score a touchdown, and I was like, oh, that's probably pissing Russ off. And then the next day, we get Jason Lockenfora's tweet that Russ is frustrated, and it's a situation worth monitoring. And I was like, ah, damn, let me pour a drink. Like, this is going to be a very long offseason. I tweeted out that night, this is Monday, February 8th, three things that are all still very true. The first thing, QBs are very largely in control of their quarterback, of their sack rates and their pressure rate. That's true. Point number two, the Seahawks have done a very bad job putting an offensive line around Russell Wilson the last 9 years. Also true. Point number three, it's going to be a very long offseason. And like 10 days later, oh no, that's bad math. However many days later we are removed from that tweet, all three things are very true. Just now the whole world is talking about them.
Well, the reason everybody's talking about it is because it's so out of character from Russell Wilson. And if this was any other quarterback or whatever, we'd probably look at it and say, maybe not a lot there. But the fact that it's Russell Wilson who is trying to do this in maybe the nicest way possible, that's why a lot of people are kind of like wondering, something's up here, because Russell usually doesn't do this. And is this Russell's way of trying to force his way out? And how much of this is related to, as you, Jenks and Sando outline in the article in The Athletic, a great read, by the way, Mike, is this because of how they treated him and how, they went from holding him accountable or not holding him as accountable in the past and all of a sudden trying to be tougher on him and that relationship changing a little bit? Like, how much of this is perhaps from how they've managed him personally the past few years?
Yeah, it's almost like they created a monster, Like, what did Richard Sherman try to tell us, 4 years ago? He was like, hey, guys, the rules don't apply to Russell the same. He's being coddled and he's being treated differently and we don't like it. Right, like he was kind of speaking for the defense and some guys on the offense. And what do you do when you treat someone like they're special? They behave like they're special, right? Like, how many players are walking into the office are calling the guy calling the shots and be like, hey, man, I want to know which O-lineman we about to get, for agency. And it's like, it's not your business. Trust us. We got it. This is our job. And it's just like, well, I want more say over who the offensive coordinator is. Again, that is our job. You do your thing over there. But it's like Russell expects those things. He wants those things. But look who he compares himself to. People like Tom Brady. Tom Brady didn't get to pick players like Gronk and AB and stuff until he was in like year 20. You know what I mean? And had six rings at the time. But Russell, he feels himself as special. He's a special talent. But what he wants is like extra special. Like, I want personnel control. I want to help pick the offensive coordinator. Like, these are all things that like Seattle has enabled him to desire. Based on treating him a certain way in the past. And I wonder now, I'd love to ask Pete Carroll this, if he regrets doing that, if he regrets kind of putting the kid gloves on Russ while preaching accountability and always compete to everyone else on the roster, because it seems to have kind of backfired on them.
Yeah, boy, it's interesting because, I come, not that I'm the biggest Russ guy, Mike, but franchise quarterbacks, they are special, aren't they? They're the hardest thing to find in maybe professional sports. When you have one, you don't ever want to let it go. This guy wins a Super Bowl. A lot of people would say he is the team. Shouldn't he be treated a little special?
Well, I think it's a slippery slope, right? Like, you don't really want to give any individual player, too much power, but you do want to do what's in the best interest of the team. So if a player recommends something that is like objectively and obviously better for the team, you should oblige. Like, if Russell Wilson calls Pete Carroll and says, I want better O-line, the answer should be yes, sir. Like, because that's better for everybody. Nobody on the Seattle Seahawks payroll benefits from the Seattle Seahawks having bad O-line. Nobody. Zero. Not the equipment manager, not the water boys, not the cameraman, not Jody Allen. Nobody. So, like, that thing that he's asking for and has been asking for a while, that should be just a yes. And because it's not, we're in this position. So I don't necessarily know if you should treat, you know, one guy very different from everyone else. I think you should set a standard that you guys are all the same. Like, I think that's what Bill Belichick did. I mean, even Bruce Arians, we were using the Tom Brady example still. Bruce will go in there and cuss Tom Brady out too, right? Mm-hmm. But you didn't see Pete doing that. He chose to, again, kind of create the monster in that way. So I wouldn't necessarily treat the quarterback like he's special, you know, because you still want him to be able to have a connection with the guys. And if they feel like he's an extension of management, it's going to be hard to resonate with your players, which is what they wrote about in Sports Illustrated like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, all of these things that can be a problem are actually a problem, and it goes to, like, the behavior of the quarterback and his mindset and how he was treated by management. And it just happens to be that management is basically Pete Carroll, who took this job because he was going to get all the control. So who is he to, like, relinquish control for a quarterback who has limitations and is just as responsible for that 394 sack number as the O-line is?
That was the Greg Bishop piece way back when, right?
The Greg Bishop one, yeah, it was like a dynasty that never was or something like that. And
yeah.
It made the point that, like, I think they called Russ a snitch in that article, which was wild.
Right.
It basically made it seem like, yo, we can't say anything around Russ because it'll get to Pete. It's like, I like the juxtaposition now, like, years later. Like, at that point, he was too close to management. And right now, it seems like he couldn't be further away from management, at least in terms of, like, ideology. It's really fascinating.
Well, it's one of those things, like, in any relationship, if you start putting boundaries in a few years into things, it's not going to go over well. Because it's like, hey, why are you changing things all of a sudden? You're giving me the world, now you're not communicating, you're not giving me what I want. And it's hard to establish those new boundaries when a relationship's already been established. And one of the things I found fascinating was, which you guys outlined in the article, there have been a few moments where John Schneider, doing his job, was checking out Josh Allen. He was into Patrick Mahomes, and had he been available later in the first round, they would have maybe selected him. And the whole Josh Allen thing, they checked him out. And there was rumors about checking in on the Cleveland Browns in 2018 for the first overall pick, and Wilson got wind of that. Is that really out of the ordinary from what front offices do when they check in on new quarterbacks in the draft, check the market just to understand what's going on? Or does Russ actually have a legitimate gripe with his name being mentioned and perhaps them looking at a successor already?
You know, I think that that's actually their full due diligence, what they should do. And I think we have that in there as well, that John Schneider in 2005 was working for the Packers when Aaron Rodgers fell to them, when they already had Brett Favre. And I don't know if we had this in there as well, but they were unprepared to take Aaron Rodgers. They were scrambling. They were making phone calls. Like, they hadn't done their research already. They took him, obviously, but they didn't want to be in a position where they were unprepared again. So John made it a point, like, I'm going to be prepared. So even if Josh Allen is a top 10 guy, but we have pick 18, just you never know what's going to happen. So I want to be prepared. That is legitimately just doing your job. Now, is calling the Browns or having the Browns talk to you about the number one overall pick, is that doing your job? That's a little interesting. I don't know if I would have dumped Russ at that time. But I don't necessarily think that those were full-on slights to Russell's people as much as they were, like, they were surprised. And that's why those type of situations led to the no trade clause. It's not that, like, hey, how dare you go to Laramie, Wyoming when you guys already have Russ. It's if you do go to Laramie and you want to get Josh Allen, you can't make a move without us knowing. Like, it was being surprised and kind of blindsided by those things. It wasn't necessarily that they did their job. Russell's people know that's John's job, but it was like, you caught us off guard with those things. Like, when Russell's people called John after he was at Josh Allen's pro day, it wasn't, what were you doing there? It was like, okay, well, what does this mean? Is there something we should know? And now with the no trade clause, it's like, you can't do nothing unless we say so. And that's why one of the big things in this theme of this story is power and control. Because what is Russ's camp doing with the no trade clause? That's power. That's control of the situation. And that's what the Seahawks really didn't want to give them, but they were kind of forced to. And here we are.
Michael Sean Duggar joins us from The Athletic Seattle. So, bottom line, what's your sense? Like you said, it's going to be a long off season. There might be twists and turns in this road, but teams were calling about him. I heard out there that three first round picks is kind of the bottom line asking price. Is your sense that these two sides are having irreconcilable differences? Are we headed for a Russell Wilson offseason move?
You know, I think the three first round picks thing, I think Mike Silver, NFL Network, threw that out there. I don't know. I don't think the Seahawks told him that. I really don't. I think he's kind of just guessing. Like, not to discredit Mike's sources, but I don't get that feel from the Seahawks. Because they don't want to trade him. Like, that's why I don't think they set any number. Like, yeah, it'll take three firsts. They don't even want to consider that, right? It's like, we want to keep you. Like, three firsts, 10 firsts, we don't want to not have a quarterback. Right? Like, what's the common denominator in some of those, in the situation where they were doing their due diligence? In 2017, they were going to take a quarterback, Mahomes. 2018, they looked at who? Josh Allen, a quarterback. What were they going to do with the number one overall pick if they had it in 2018? Probably take a quarterback. This stuff about picks in the first round, no, you need a quarterback. John, the most important person on the team is a quarterback. John Schneider knows that. Pete Carroll knows that. They didn't really win a damn thing until they had one here in Seattle. So they don't want to get rid of him. It's all about making him happy enough to make sure Russ is, like, not on the damn Packers, so saying he's frustrated. So I think the only thing that really fixes this is winning. That's it. They have to win. They have to get back to the Super Bowl. If Russ has to watch another Super Bowl in a suite next to Roger Goodell, he's going to get – he might just not show up to work. Like, that's just how serious it's going to be. In 2022, if the Seahawks haven't gotten back to the Super Bowl, I highly doubt you see Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson both on the same payroll. They can't coexist if they're not going to win.
Mike, before we let you go, and you've been very gracious with your time, and just quickly, final question – is it too fantastical and too much NBA trade machine to even think of a package that could involve Wilson for Watson or Wilson for Dak, where you're getting a player back in return who is your answer right away? Or is that too NBA for us?
No, I mean, we talked about this in my Seahawks Man to Man podcast that dropped today with the story. The Dak thing makes sense. I mean, it's a lot more difficult than it needs to be if you're Dallas, right? You can just sign your guy and hang up on Seattle and just kind of proceed without having to do a bunch of cap, you know, manufacturing and stuff. But if you call Jerry Jones and, like, look, at the end of the day, if you don't want Dak, you can have Russell Wilson. Okay, cool. Well, I'll do that. And if you call Seattle and it's like, look, we know you want to keep Russ, but he wants out. So the best you can do is just get Dak. Okay, cool. If you're Russell, it's like, look, we know you want to be a star. You care about your legacy. You want to win. Cool. Dallas has decent the line in the past, at least. They got receivers. Go work that out. Like, all three can kind of agree, but for Dallas, it's a lot simpler to be like, well, why don't we just pay Dak? You know, we ain't got to do nothing too complicated. So I wouldn't rule out some of those things, but this year, I think it's too complicated. Like, Russ will play for the Seahawks in 2021, but again, if they're not wherever the Super Bowl is, I think maybe L.A. If they're not in L.A. at the Super Bowl next year, heads will roll. I don't know if that's Pete's head, John's head, Russ's head. Somebody's head's rolling.
Hey, man, great stuff. As you know, there's a lot of Russ fans and a lot of Seahawks fans up here, so we'll be following your stuff very closely. Thanks for making time today.
Oh, thank you for having me. Have a good one.
All right, see you later. Michael Sean Dugar, Seahawks reporter from The Athletic Seattle. Really, really interesting. And I know this kind of sprung up a while ago, fellas, but I'll be honest, I loved the tea, like I loved the drama, but it's like there's no way you move off of Russell Wilson, are you crazy? And then you read all the stuff today and it's like, man, these guys, they need couples therapy at the very least. There's some trouble, that's for sure.
You can't trade him though, right, Bick? I mean, it's one of those situations where it's like, and Tambier mentioned it to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox. It's like Kobe when he asked for a trade and he was trying to force
right.
his way out. You just say no.
Well, you can't trade Deshaun Watson either. You can't trade Watson either, and that's going one way.
Right, but I think that's far worse, right? Like, I mean, Watson, the situation is far worse than the one with Seattle. Like, if you can't get a Dak or a Watson in return for Russ, it just makes no sense to make that deal unless you completely want to rebuild the team.
Not to mention just the financial implications of how this all works. Like, it's nice to say, hey, I want to go to the Saints. The Saints are $70 million over the cap right now. And I know the cap is kind of fake and everything like that.
Yeah.
But even that is a lot of cap gymnastics to make it work.
Yeah.
What's interesting there, though, and Mike did a great job detailing it, it's, you know, you and Seth, you asked him the question of just how he's treated Russell Wilson a certain way that's different from everyone else. That's all fine and good, right? Like, that happens to some degree in the NFL. But here's the thing. Like, that works if Russell Wilson's on board.
Mm-hmm.
And you can preach always compete and all these things and exclude Russell Wilson from that. But until the minute that he's not on board, suddenly it looks way worse than it is. And that's where we're at right now, right? If the minute Russell Wilson's like, okay, that's cool, but what about all this other stuff? Suddenly the philosophy and the paradigm of what Pete Carroll builds, falls really quickly when Russell Wilson's not on board.
Speaking of infighting and not being necessarily on the same page, when we come back, I have a theory to share with you fellas. This is what I was going to bring up yesterday, and I said I don't think we have time because I know we'll talk about it. I'm a little concerned for the future of our show, our little show here on Sportsnet 650.
Let's go.
Yeah, I spent some time over the last week.
You guys didn't let me choose the offensive coordinator, so I demand a trade.
I was putting two and two together. And if you're a fan of putting two and two together, I'm not saying conspiracy theorist, but if you like connecting the dots, I think this could be a big couple of days for our show here. I'll tell you what I mean when we come back. We're half an hour away from Canucks Oilers pregame as well on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome to the program with Andrew Walker and Satyar Shah.
Welcome back. 4:33 on your Thursday. Walk, Sat, Bick, Nazar. Canucks game day. The official Land Rover pregame show gets going in about 30 minutes. I want to talk a little bit about Connor McDavid before puck drop tonight. I've never been more convinced. We'll ask Adnan Virk about this in a few minutes. I've never been more convinced that he is going to do, I'm not saying it's tonight, but it's going to happen. He's going to do the Daryl Sittler at some point and get 10 points. There's just a number of factors that have to happen for the perfect storm to come together. But mark my words, it is happening at some point with Connor McDavid.
This season or in his career?
In his career. Oh. In his career.
So, you know, if the Seattle Kraken screw up the expansion draft and they have, like, really bad defense next season, who knows?
Or next season. Or maybe, just maybe, what if the Ottawa Senators go into the tank completely, trade a couple of guys get injured? Could he light up the Sens, like in Hogberg or something this season?
Yeah.
Is that a possibility?
It takes a team that quits. It takes a lot of, you know, power plays. It takes a hungover goalie, right? and more importantly, it has to be like Connor wanting it, Dave Tippett saying, yeah, go for it, man. And also his teammates being like, get the puck to McDavid. Yeah. I mean, because this guy has 5 or 6 points in his sleep and then sits in the third period. He's done that like 3 times this year.
Yeah, way too easy, right? Like, it's, I mean, and I said this on TV the other night when talking about Connor McDavid. Like, I'm here for the conversations. And listen, you want to have a take, go ahead, whatever. You can make an argument if you want. But we all know who the best player is. And it is a lot like Shaq in his prime, right? Where every year people are trying to make an argument for somebody else being the guy. It's Connor's world, man. It really, really is. And nobody can do what he can do.
All right. So I did some digging. Not real digging, but a little conspiracy theory. Okay. Do you guys want to hear it? I'm a little – it's a weird time in media, but I'm specifically a little worried about our show here.
Okay.
And I think there's been I don't know if we're all on the same page. So here's what I mean. Tomorrow, a big shout out to the guys in Toronto, Tim McAuliffe and Sid Sixero. Tomorrow is their final show. Long running. Tim and Sid have been around forever, right? Since their days at the Score. Tomorrow's the final episode of Tim and Sid. Sid moves to Breakfast Television. I think you're just doing a highlight show tomorrow. Today is their second last day. The show's just ending or just ended before the top of the hour. So it's a big deal, right? And, you know, what are they going to do? Sid's gone, and it's a big hole in, you know, Canadians' national sports media.
Yeah.
And much like Jack Eichel today, a late scratch for the Buffalo Sabres and everybody freaking out.
Oh, I see.
We get a message today that Sat Shaw, inexplicably, has requested Friday off. This is a normal day. Fridays are fun. The TGIF edition of the show. No. Sat's not working. And no one's talking about it. Why? The reason why. Like, who takes off Friday? So, listen, we all know what's happening, Sat. Mm. We know that you probably have some big Sportsnet announcement today because it's time for Tim and Sat. So just come clean. And maybe this is, I don't know, maybe there's an email. Maybe I'm going to get fired because there's an email and it's like, what do you call it when you can't announce something?
Embargo?
Embargoed. Maybe it's embargoed, and they're going to announce Sat as the new Tim and Sat tomorrow. But I'm telling you, I put two and two together, and if you have a better idea for what's going on, I'm all ears.
I really can't say anything.
Yeah. Yeah, shocker.
It's
well, congratulations.
You know how NDAs work. You can't really say anything.
I didn't sign nothing. So.
You didn't. Didn't sign anything. And I'm not confirming nor denying that I signed something. Like, I really don't know what you're talking about. I have nothing to add to this conversation.
Well, congratulations. It is officially the worst kept secret in Canadian sports media.
I really don't know what you're talking about.
So irresponsible.
Well, listen. I'm just doing digging, right? This is just investigative reporting, and just I cannot confirm anything. I haven't double sourced this, but there's too much. There's too much that does add up. Final show, late scratch of the show on Friday. What time's the press conference? That's all I want to know. What time's the press conference?
Let me just say that based on my itinerary. For the next 3 days, don't expect anything to Monday.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say.
All right.
I can't say anything else. I have nothing else to add to this conversation.
On the text line, 650-650, Brain O'Shion says, the program has been canceled. Reach Deep extended to 6 hours. I tell you what, Reach Deep already feels like 6 hours, to be quite honest. So.
Well, Password feels like 6 hours.
6 days. 6 months. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line if you want to weigh in. Adnan Virk going to join us momentarily. For the record, I have to say this, but, you know, for you dummies out there, I will say it. I'm kidding. I'm joking. I would feel really bad if I did spoil your big national contract. And you're like, well, thanks.
Just fell backwards into sails. A scoop.
Pardon me?
Again, Andrew, I can neither confirm nor deny.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So now that I'm into the stock market and losing all my money, you're like, you know, when I'm asking about a merger and you're like, I cannot confirm or deny the merger. Like that's
it would be insider trading. And
yeah.
In this case, it would be a breaking an NDA, so I really can't say
that's
much.
That's true. Non-disclosure for sure. All right. Yeah. Adnan Virk joins us weekly from the NHL and MLB Network and the GM Shuffle podcast, and he joins us now on the show. How's it going? Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday, boys. I just wanted to say congrats to Seth. The fact that he's replacing Cicero, him and Tim together. I look forward to what's going to be. Wait, is that not out public yet? Oh, I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry. That's the betting line right now.
It's just speculation at this point, but
I'm going to get sued at this point for breaking my NDA.
Yeah, much like the Russell Wilson stuff though, where there's smoke, there's fire. You know, happens to be true most of the time.
I got too big for my britches. Yeah,
and it's so funny though, Sat. Listen, I wish you nothing but the best, and you're going to have a real blast at the Calif. As the guy who sat next to him for the better part of 6 years. It was always interesting. I love that Sean Fitzgerald did an article in The Athletic about Sid and Tim, and I got reached out to by Toronto Star reporter for my thoughts on Sid and Tim. So I love the fact these guys are taking one last tour of the battlefield here. Thankfully, neither is going away, but of course the union is splitting up as of tomorrow. So it's been fun. It's basically a self-aggrandizing way of saying it's been fun that I have also been looped into conversations about those two because people happen to have fond memories of all of our group when we were together at the score.
What was Friedman? All right, so nothing. I love Friedman, man, but he strikes me as maybe he wasn't part of the cool kids club at the score. What was it like?
Sure. Well, it's funny. It's accurate. No, it's accurate, but only because he wasn't an anchor. Like where we sat, we used to call it News Pit 2.
Okay.
It was literally Sid and Tim together, and then it was me, Todd Macklin, sports producer. Cabby and I, who have been friends forever because we were friends in college at Ryerson, and then our friend Sonny, who was the spin producer, which was Steve Koulias, and Koulias was on the other side, and then my producer was Kotso. So Fries was rarely there. Like, he would literally come in, he'd bring in his tapes, old school, he would go and, mark his time codes, he would cut his story with an editor, and then he would bounce. So, the rest of us were rolling in at 4 or 5 p.m., and we're literally screwing around until showtime. I would do court surfing at 8, and then Sid and Tim were on at 10. But whereas Cab would still hang with us and he was editing as well. He's doing his own stories, obviously. Freege was just in and out, which is not to say he was not one of the cool kids, but he was not into socializing or wasting anyone's time or ridiculous impressions of coworkers or backstabbing, all the stuff that we specialized in. Freege was apart from that. That is not to say he was not one of the guys. I mean, come and say hello, what's up, boys, but then he just didn't have time for our frivolity.
This is probably inside to inside broadcasting, but like our big boss now at Rogers Sports and Media, like, and I, you know, kind of grew up watching him, but the guy that could, you know, dump me off a boat in the Pacific Ocean if he wanted to is Greg Sansone. Does that surprise you?
It does a little bit, and this is not a slight at all to Greg, but just because when you put it in those terms, like, I knew Greg was an executive. I was at the Score when he sashayed from on-air host of To the Point to, hey, I'm going to do some stuff here for the Levies. I'm going to start to try some executive stuff. I didn't realize he had that kind of juice, Walker. If you said to me, would you be surprised that Greg Sansone is an executive? Like, no, listen, Greg was always a smart guy, buttoned up. And like I said, I saw him making that transition, and it was relatively smooth. Like, it went from colleague to he was one of my bosses. And it was like, all right. Like, he literally sat down with each of us and told us expectations of what he thought of us. And the good news was Greg was a fan of all of ours. So it wasn't like all of a sudden he went from our teammate to now being the heavy. It's kind of like my man David Ross now with managing the Cubs. It's not like all of a sudden he's being hard on Anthony Rizzo. Like, they're friends. So they're friends, but now I'm the manager. Okay,
yeah.
So expectations have changed. So the point is Greg sat down with me, Sid, Tim, Cabby. Hey, listen, we're all friends here, but I'm the boss now, whatever. Like, here's what's happening. So that part of it, I'm not surprised. When you put it that way, like, he has more clout than anyone at Rogers. I guess that's a little bit surprising to me.
Adnan Anverk is our guest, MLB Network, NHL Network, and also the GM Shuffle podcast with Mike Lombardi. And, you know, focusing in on the NHL here for a few minutes, Adnan, the situation in Buffalo has been absolutely fascinating. And tonight, Jack Eichel is not going to play. Now it's because of a lower body injury. We've seen Jeff Skinner be healthy scratch, it seems like, every game lately as well. How big of a mess do you see this this Sabre situation being? And, you know, I know they've been rebuilding to rebuild as well, kind of like what Edmonton's done, but are they at the stage now where they may have to try to blow it up completely and try to rebuild it again?
Well, God, I hope not, because it's just been like, it seemed like it's perpetually rebuilding. So I don't want to blow up anything, because in my head I'm like, what would you be blowing up? I guess trading Jack Eichel, but I would say no to that. You know, I think what's happened is that, honestly, Seth, they've been trying to collect talent. They've been trying to get, you know, different pieces, and then hopefully it all coalesces. But instead, what's happened is that, and we've seen this, last year they had a hot start, at one point looked really good, then all of a sudden starts slumping again. And it's like, it's almost like they make two steps forward and take three steps backward. So listen, they snapped that four-game losing streak. They obviously ended the Devils' three-game run the other day. But, I mean, listen, Skinner has been just a mess. I mean, the fact that they scratched a guy making $72 million, that's insane to me. Like, I don't even know how you just kind of reconcile that. And for Ralph Kruger, listen, he's the head coach. He's the one that's in charge. But Skinner's production, it gets horrifying what's happened. I mean, he led the Sabres 2018-2019 season. He was a 40-goal guy, 63 points. And then all of a sudden last year you go, wait, what's just happened? Like, his numbers going to brutal. He was under 40 points last year, 59 games. And this year he's got one assist through 14 games. So they're scrambling right now. It's a real problem when a guy like Skinner is that bad. But to your point, if you were to rebuild, the guy would be Eichel. Like, if you totally blew it up and go, you know what, fine, if Eichel wants out, he'll command a really hefty price, let's do this. But I'm just saying, like, I just feel for the Sabres fans because they feel like they're trying to get closer to the playoffs. Maybe they're not. Maybe it's a mirage. Maybe it's fool's gold. But if you deal Eichel, if you felt like you were a year away or 2 years away, well, now you're 4 or 5 years away. So it would just be disheartening to see for Buffalo fans.
Adnan Verk joins us here on the show. We get Connor McDavid again here tonight against the Canucks. And two nights ago, Adnan, he wasn't as dynamic as he usually is, and he still scored the game-tying goal. He had two posts that should have been goals. He missed a breakaway, and then he missed an empty netter. Guy could have had five goals. I've never been more convinced it's only a matter of time before we get that night where he goes Daryl Sittler. What has to happen, and do you think it'll happen?
For Connor McDavid specifically?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I think will happen? It would be one of those situations, Walker, where it'd have to be an anemic team. So, you know, in a season like this, it'd have to be Ottawa, because they're obviously the worst team in the Scotia North Division. I think they'd have to have a ton of penalties to the other team. He gets a bunch of, you know, easier goals on the power play. I don't know if he can quite get to Sittler. I mean, listen, 10-point nights is obviously a lofty goal. But I think it would be just a dynamic situation where he's playing at his best. Like you said, they have a lot of power plays. They're playing a bad team in Ottawa. I mean, we just don't see – the problem is this, guys. We just don't see a lot of those scores you used to see in the 70s and 80s. Like, you would see, like, a 10-2 game every once in a while. That's just hard to see now in today's NHL. But, listen, could he have a seven-point night? Sure. Like, if it was a 7-3 win, he was a part of 7 points, I could totally see that. What's crazy for the Oilers is that, you know, him and Draisaitl are so dynamic. And, you know, it's been frustrating because you go, well, who else is there? Like, who else can supplement these guys? And, you know, you hope Nugent Hopkins is coming on strong, better season this year. Like, Edmonton's going to make the playoffs, I think. Like, you know, it feels like Montreal had the hot start. They slow down. They fire Claude Julien, hoping to turn things around with Ducharme. Toronto has clearly shown themselves to be, obviously, offensively loaded. But I feel like Edmonton's right there. I think Edmonton's going to be a playoff team. So I think McDavid is only going to get better. I think anyone who watches him Walker night in, night out knows how special he is. But I would love to see the Oilers make a deep run, because I do think there's a segment of the population in America who sees the numbers and know he's great, but it's pretty impressive when you get to see the guy in the playoffs. Like, I'll give you an example. Nathan MacKinnon, I think, benefited from such a strong playoff run last year for the Avalanche. And if the Avs could have made the Cup Final, he'd become a lot more of a household name. I think all hockey fans know McDavid is sensational. But to your point, a Sittler-type night, a deep playoff run, those would go further towards burnishing his legend and making him a household name, particularly stateside.
Terry and Burnaby on the text line went exactly what I was going to say to you. If Gagne can score 8, McDavid can get 10. I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I suppose 8 is enough, and it could happen in today's world. But I just think it's horrible. I don't see the goals being dashed in the way it was in the Sittler era or the 80s era. But that's just me.
Adnan Virk is our guest. And, you know, we know the Edmonton Oilers are going to be a playoff team. The Calgary Flames, they're the interesting team here, and they're already down 2-0 against the Ottawa Senators tonight. Jacob Markstrom's already injured, and, you know, not a surprise to us here in Vancouver, Adnan, because when he plays a lot, doesn't get a rest, he usually does get hurt. That's what's happened. Now he's in IR for the next little while. We know what the situation is around their head coach. They made a lot of bets this offseason. Is this the next team where something's going to give here? I know they don't want to keep firing coaches, but Montreal did something after a very ambitious offseason. The Calgary Flames had a very ambitious offseason. They lose to the Sens tonight. Is that the final straw here before something happens in Calgary, you think?
I don't think so just yet. I mean, maybe you guys would know better than I would. At least proximity-wise, you are closer to Calgary than I am, but I have not heard any whispers as far as the Flames making a coaching change. We all know what happened with Bill Peters, obviously. Jeff Ward comes in. I was working this week with Bruce Boudreau, of course, the former coach, and Brian Lawton. And Bruce kind of had an inkling on what was happening with Montreal. The night before, he kind of whispered, like, hey, I don't believe it, but I'm hearing some stuff out of Montreal. So he hasn't said anything to me, like, hey, I'm hearing something about Calgary. And generally, as you guys know, coaches, they all kind of stick together. They all kind of know what's happening. So whereas the Julien news was, I think, a shock to most of us, Bruce kind of had a feeling coming. So he hasn't said anything about Calgary to me specifically. With regards to coaching, I do agree with you that they're a 500 team. They need to get better. That game against the Leafs I saw quite a bit of last night. And listen, Mangiapane scoring is one thing, but you can't just rely on big save Dave Riddick to try to get you a couple points. Their offense was fairly non-existent, which is interesting because the previous game against Toronto, in which they'd won 3-0, again, the offense was a little better, and the defense was airtight, particularly their penalty kill. They went 7-for-7 on the penalty kill against Toronto, including a minute and 36-second stretch and a 5-on-3. So that's obviously tough to replicate, one of the reasons they got the win. But, yeah, they're kind of scuffling right now. They should be better than a 500 team. I think the expectations are they are a playoff team. So I don't think it'll happen just yet, Sat, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do something if they continue to kind of hang around 500.
Well, I know with the Canucks, for instance, people have been waiting for something to happen and nothing's, you know, been imminent, and we had the owner come out and say stuff. But you mentioned, you know, working with NHL Network, seeing the guys and all that sort of stuff and talking about what's happening around the league. What's your sense about, from the outside looking in, like, how do you view the Vancouver situation and the people you talk to about what's happening here with the Canucks?
I think everyone's surprised by it, to be honest with you. Like, I was working with Mike Rupp the other day, and Mike Johnson, and like all those analysts, they all kind of say, listen, it's interesting. Brian Watson said to me, he goes, I don't think that division's as good as everyone thinks. He said, I think at first everyone's like, wow, those Canadians are flying around right now, not meaning Montreal Canadiens, but all the Canadian teams. And he goes, you know what? I think each team has a deficiency. So his view was that Toronto, as prolific as the offense is, at some point the well will run dry for 4 or 5 games, and they'll hit the skids. You know, similarly, he was pointing out flaws within Winnipeg, Edmonton, Calgary, et cetera. So for Vancouver, his opinion was they kind of hit their slow stretch now. Like, they obviously struggled coming out of the gate, but the problem is it's going to be so hard-pressed to make the playoffs. Like Dave Reed's another guy I was talking about, longtime NHL player and analyst, and he said to me, for Vancouver to make the playoffs, they have to go like on a 750 winning percentage. Because we were trying to make the point that, yeah, it's been a bad start, but listen, if you win 3 or 4, and you know, you're playing teams you're trying to catch, so theoretically, a 2-point win is a 4-point win, because obviously the other team is losing, you jump them, et cetera. But Reeder's point was, but there's no margin for error. Like, now that we're past the quarter mark, we're almost at the halfway part of the season. I mean, he goes, you literally have to win 3 of every 4 games for the Canucks. And he goes, I just don't think that they're – if you haven't done that yet, why would you all of a sudden assume they're going to flip the switch to do so? And I think at least from their perspective, the guys that I've talked to, they've mainly focused on the defense. They've mentioned, hey, how much do they miss Markstrom? You know, is Demko up to the task, him and Holpe together? It's just defensively, like, their actual defense isn't just strong enough. I think it's been a surprise.
He is Adnan Virk, NHL and MLB Network, and check out his NFL takes on the GM Shuffle podcast as well. We got to run, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, boys. I love the show. That's a Sansoni and all his juice. And Sat, once again, good luck with the guy.
Yeah. We love Sansoni. Leader. No, leader, right? All right, coming up after 5, we will get into the Vancouver Canucks conversation, guys. It's the official Land Rover pregame show, and I got a question for you if you want to weigh in on the text line as well. You know, we can debate playoffs. If you want to do that, we can debate playoffs. The young players that we expect to be good and develop and get better and better, are there actually any important Canucks that you are a bit worried about long term? Like, you know, you haven't necessarily liked what you've seen this year, and you think it's more than a blip. We'll get into that as well as the Land Rover pregame show hits next right here in your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.